You're listening to the Uncensored Direct Marketing Show. This show is designed for direct response marketers who want raw, unfiltered conversion tips and secrets to scale their offers profitably to reach their next million. I'm Maria Sparakis. I'm the founder of Direct Paint It and your host. Now let's dive in. Direct response advertising versus branding and building brand awareness. My name is Maria Sparagas, and I work with thousands of seven and eight figure merchants, mainly in the direct response arena, and I help them with establishing reliable and solid payment processing solutions for their business. Now, today I want to talk to you a little bit about direct response marketing and some things that you can apply from branding that can help your direct response business explode and get to the next level. As we know, the trends right now in 2024 is to build some more brand awareness, to get more trust from the consumer. Consumers have been had, as we can see, in a lot of FTC cases and a lot of complaints on complaints boards and so forth. Consumers are starting to get weary of brandless and faceless products. So it is important, if you're a direct response business and a direct response offer owner, to try to take some principles from branding, large branding businesses and, you know, companies who have been around for a long time, and try to apply them to a smaller scale to your direct response business so you can start gaining some trust. Now, let's be clear on what both of these terms mean. So I know we're gonna get to the basics here, but let's just be clear what the difference is between direct response marketing and branding and building awareness. Direct response is a type of marketing designed to elicit an instant response by encouraging prospects to take a specific action. So direct response advertisements usually trigger an immediate action from a prospective buyer, since the goal is really to generate leads very quickly. Now, branding is the promotion of a product or a company in order to build awareness, and it's usually done by advertising and distinctive design. So it's really to lift the perception of the consumer as to a product or service. It doesn't necessarily elicit an immediate action from the consumer. It's just basically to get into their mind share and to get them to understand that this is a trustworthy company and so forth. So when they are in the purchase decision, they will remember a specific brand. Now, let me give you a couple of examples of these. So we've all seen direct response offers pretty much all over the place. If you want to lose weight, or if you want, you know, something for your skin, or many brands that you don't recognize in the health and beauty space would qualify as direct response companies. Now, let's keep in mind, I'm not saying that this is a bad company or a company that doesn't provide value, but their main goal is really to convert you from an ad to buying a product very immediately. And sometimes with a lot of direct response companies, there is little continuity and there's little customer building relationship. Whereas, you know, your branding and your bigger companies that are really focusing on branding, they're trying to build relationships with their customers, and the customer may not buy anything from them for 6 months or 12 months and then later on be a convert to that specific brand. Now, let me give you a perfect example of branding. So branding, for example, if you were somebody who was around in the 90s, Calvin Klein jeans were really, you know, kind of the big thing. And Calvin Klein in general, underwear, jeans, and so forth, were quite big and quite popular at the time. Now, if you look at a lot of the Calvin Klein ads, it's really focused on very beautiful people, you know, very glamorous and very simple in terms of clothing. You actually don't really notice that somebody's wearing Calvin Klein jeans or Calvin Klein underwear. You're kind of focused on so much that's going on in the ad, like the beautiful person, maybe a celebrity, their abs, their, you know, beautiful hair, all that stuff. And then there's just like probably less than 5% of the ad that has that branding, but your eye immediately kind of goes there, because that's, you know, the beauty of marketing and brand awareness. Now, another perfect example of branding is cigarette companies. Obviously, a lot of countries now have banned cigarette company advertising and so forth, but cigarette companies were really experts at marketing and at branding. If you ever watched the series Mad Men, you'll remember, you know, Don Draper was a big executive in a marketing agency, and he used to do a lot of ads for cigarette companies. And it was really strategic product placement. For example, a really big Hollywood movie, somebody would be smoking a specific brand of cigarette, and it wouldn't even be mentioned. It wouldn't even be part of the scene. It was just that it was in there. So when you're creating a brand, you're doing these types of things. You're just, you know, popping your products in different strategic places. You're, you know, having a beautiful ad with maybe beautiful people, or, you know, depending on what the customer avatar is, you represent that customer avatar, and you just simply have 5 or 10% of the ad kind of talking about what that product is. And the consumer almost has to do a little bit of work to figure out, you know, what is this brand? What are they selling, and so forth? So it kind of gets them curious, and obviously elicits some emotion to them. Less emotion than direct response, because direct response really, if you're a good direct response marketer, and if you want to be a good direct response marketer, the key is really to elicit a very strong emotion. It could be, you know, it could be anger, it could be frustration, it could be, you know, trying to relieve pain, or, you know, but it has to be a really strong emotion right away, whereas branding is kind of more subdued. Now, another popular thing about branding is sometimes using music strategically or creating a jingle. I may date myself, and I'm definitely not a good singer, but, you know, one that kind of always comes out, and I haven't seen this commercial in years, and I don't even know if they're still airing it, but Folgers coffee. I don't even drink Folgers coffee, but the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. That is expert branding, right? I mean, I don't drink Folgers, and I, you know, I haven't seen a commercial, but it's a commercial that ran so many times that it really stuck in my head, and that jingle keeps coming back. And, you know, I can see the commercial over and over again. And that is the power of branding and the power of repetition. So I do want to go through a couple of things and a couple of rules of marketing. So we've all heard of the rule of seven. So in general, in marketing, it's kind of a hidden aspect of marketing. A lot of people kind of talk a lot about in the industry the rule of seven, that it takes seven touch points with a customer before they buy. Now, let's dig into that a little bit further and explore if it really is still applicable with all types of marketing. So yes, the rule of seven does apply a lot to the direct response world, and that's what a lot of direct response marketers use. But if we take it a step further and kind of bring it up to date to 2024, it actually is closer to 20 at this point. So 20 different touch points, or 20 different times somebody has to see you in order to feel comfortable in buying that decision. So in fact, as direct response marketing is growing and branding is growing, they're getting closer and closer together. I mean, eventually, I think it's going to be pretty important for all direct response marketers to build a brand in order to make a sale, as the quick and easy sales that we saw 10 years ago online are just starting to become a little bit less prevalent because consumer trust is waning due to obviously some bad actors in the industry. Now, let me explain a little bit the timeline and what is a general rule or general consensus of how a consumer buys. In general, the first four times somebody sees your ad, they don't notice it. They don't really pay attention. They just kind of scroll through. So if you're advertising and you're not, you know, maybe retargeting or showing the ad more than four times, odds are you're just leaving a lot of money on the table, because it takes four times minimum. The fifth time is when somebody starts to notice, you know, this ad or this particular product. Now, the fifth time you actually see it is when you read it. That's when you just say, hey, I've seen this multiple times. And this is something that happens subconsciously to a lot of customers. It's not like they're like, hey, I saw this five times, I should read it now, and so forth. It's just something that is part of consumer behavior. So the fifth time is when somebody starts kind of just looking at it and saying, oh, what is this product? I keep seeing this ad, and so on and so forth. Funny enough, you know, after many, many studies, they've noticed that between the sixth and the eighth time, the ad starts annoying you. You're like, hey, what's this ad? Why do I keep seeing this? I don't need this. I don't want this. Why do they keep targeting me, and so forth? But then by the ninth time, that's when you start kind of changing your mind about it. You're like, you know, maybe this is something that I should take a closer look at. So you start kind of investigating, perhaps asking a friend, Googling the brand, or doing some kind of other side research on that particular product or service. Now, by the 13th time that you've seen an ad, you're probably thinking it's a legit product or service. Now, regardless of what the product or service is, or whether it's legit or not, it's just the power of repetition. And, you know, a lot of psychologists and people who study advertising say that the more you see something, the more you tend to trust it, right? So by the 13th time is when, you know, most consumers are starting to trust your product or service just simply by seeing it more and more. So repetition here is key. Obviously, you've noticed. Now, between the 14th and the 19th time that you see an ad, you start finding reasons that you think you should buy it. So it might be between the 14th and the 19th time where somebody actually buys, but typically on the 20th time is when the sale is going to be closed. Now, you're not going to sell everybody, of course, but you know, 20 times is a lot of times to show an ad. And this should technically happen in a shorter amount of time. You don't want to go, you know, 1 year showing this, but you also cannot overshow your ad or be too aggressive in showing your ads, because that's when people will block your ad or just avoid you. So you have to understand, you know, and test what is the best cycle in terms of serving up these ads. When is it time to take a break? For example, maybe between the 11th and the 13th time, you want to take a 2 or 3 week break so you get out of the customer sphere and then you come back, right? So that could be a strategy, and all these things have to be tested. But 20 times is now the consensus of how many times somebody has to have a touch point, or a customer has to have a touch point, in order to buy your product or service. The old times of the rule of seven are now slowly fading, and people need more and more interaction with your brand or your product or service in order to see it. Now, the reason for that, and the reason the rule of seven is no longer applicable in 2024, is just because we are seeing way more ads than we used to 10 years ago. I mean, we are flooded with ads all over social media. We are flooded with ads on our mobiles, even on emails, we see ads now. We're seeing ads on YouTube. We're seeing ads as we're driving. We're seeing ads everywhere. So just the quantity of ads is so much bigger than it was 10 years ago, that at this point, it's normal that it would just take a lot more times of seeing something in order to remember it and start looking into it and so forth. So keep that in mind as you're building your advertising strategy. The rule of seven, gone. We're now moving over to the rule of 20. And you know, as we increase more ads and more visuals, and you know, as AI becomes more prevalent and people start releasing more ads and more ways to interact with the consumer, that might even increase. So you have to be very strategic and very smart about how you use your advertising dollars. Now, if you're in direct response and you're paying for all these ad impressions and you're paying for all these different ways of, you know, connected to your customer, 20 touch points can be, you know, almost impossible for you to achieve. But there are ways and things that you can use and examples that you can use from branding experts in order to make yourself, you know, stand out from the rest of the direct response marketers, and perhaps build a sub brand or build a little bit of a bigger connection with your customers than most direct response offers. Now, a few key things about your ad and your product and service. Number one, your ads have to be memorable. So as I said earlier about the Folgers, right? You can maybe make it a jingle or use a very recognizable song or image or something that, you know, kind of gets the customer to feel some nostalgia or to feel like they recognize your product or service just based on what you're using. That's why a lot of ads use popular songs, because when somebody likes a song, you know, they're more likely to connect to your ad or to connect to your product and service. Same thing if you find an image that, you know, could bring some nostalgia up to your customer, that could be very interesting. The key here is really to make somebody feel an emotion. You know, people are now buying with their emotions. Impulse buys are becoming lesser and lesser. The reason is because an impulse buy will later lead to a refund or a chargeback and so forth. So, you know, making sure that the customer feels connected to your brand through an emotion, and then you take them on a journey with your product, you know, through an email confirmation, through more reinforcement that they made a good decision buying your product and so forth. So I think gone are the days of just selling something and setting it and forgetting it and not contacting your customer ever again. It's just going to lead to more losses for you later on in your direct response business. If you're just selling and moving ahead, you know, you're going to get refunds, you're going to get chargebacks, you're going to get customer complaints, you're going to get customers who complain online. And when people complain online, that hurts you tremendously, because a lot of people look you up on Google and see what kind of things other people are saying, or look you up on social media and see what other people are saying. And if it's not good, then they're probably not going to buy from you. So it is very rare now that people are going onto a website and just straight out buying without doing any research if they've never heard of you. Now, the power of creating a brand is similar to this image. So take a look at this image. I'm showing two shoes, essentially, if you're listening and not watching, I'm showing two shoes. They're both white sneakers. One has a swoosh, one doesn't. Now, one costs $150 and one is $15. What is the difference here? Pretty much nothing. They're probably made in the same factory somewhere in China. Their materials are pretty much the same. They do the same thing. You wear them, you go running, you go walking, whatever the case is. But Nike is an expert at branding, and Nike makes you feel like you're getting more value. Your shoes are getting more care. Your feet feel better wearing a Nike shoe, but I can pretty much assure you it's very little difference when you're looking at base models that are kind of just, you know, going on your foot and letting you run or do whatever activity you need. So creating an image for the customer about how they should feel when they put your product on or when they use your product is a really good thing to be doing in your direct response business. So, you know, all in all, just to kind of summarize, if you are a straightforward direct response business, adding some key elements of branding are going to really propel your business to the next level. It's just going to help you, you know, build more customer loyalty, maybe get some more repeat orders. Traditionally, in direct response businesses, you know, you get a customer, you sell them something, and then they move on, you know, and you may send them an email here and there. But now you're building a relationship with the customer. They might come back and rebuy. They may subscribe to whatever product or service you're selling so they can get refills and so forth. But that all comes with making them feel an emotion and making them feel like this is a product or service that they need. In summary, what are some key things you can do and use in your direct response business and your direct response offer to ensure that you're using the basic principles of branding, but it's not costing you, you know, as much as it would cost, for example, Nike or some of the bigger companies to brand? And you obviously, as a direct response business, don't have as much time in the sales cycle to convert a customer. So you may want to condense this, but use some of these principles to really get your business to the next level. Now, as I said, you know, triggering an emotion and reviewing your copy in order to make somebody feel like they're angry or sad or nostalgic about something, that's a really key thing. So really hone in on your marketing and take a look and get some secret shoppers and different people to read your ads. Just your regular consumer, you can even do a little study group or something just to see what are people feeling when they're reading your copy or seeing your ads. You want to make them feel a specific thing. If it's not clear, then you're going nowhere. And that's definitely not going to help you, you know, get that branding feel or get that big company feel. Now, other things that you can do to bring, you know, more sales to your direct response business and really get hone in some of these tools that, you know, some of the bigger brands are using is, number one, we want to have a personal touch. So one thing that's coming back in style, I guess we could say, in marketing is phone sales. Now, phone sales really bring a personal feature to the sale. They get the customer to interact with your brand directly. So make sure if you have a third party, you know, call center, that they really embody your brand, they really embody your values as a company, and, you know, do a couple of secret shoppers and make sure that they're really explaining the product or service properly and that, you know, they're selling the product properly. But getting on the phone and calling customers, for example, if they filled the contact form partially or if they somehow interacted with you but didn't complete the purchase, that's really key in, you know, pushing them forward and telling the customer that they've made a good decision, and calling them will prove to them that you care about them. So there's, you know, a lot of win-win. Phone calls are obviously more expensive for direct response companies, but they work. And many, many companies are using call centers at this point to really close sales. The only thing is you have to make sure that you do it properly and that you're not mis-selling on the phone. The FTC is coming down hard on telemarketers and people who are doing phone sales. I'll link an episode down below if you're interested in learning more about phone sales, but this is a very big key and establishes a personal relationship with your customer that can really increase revenue tremendously. You can even upsell a lot easier. You can sell additional products to your customers if you're on the phone with them because you can answer their questions right away. Now, again, what's old is new again. Everybody thought direct mail is dead. you know, with internet advertising and, you know, different networks and social media and so forth, you know, that's where obviously all the money was going. But there are a handful of marketers that are going back to their roots and they're sending things in the mail. Now, you know, you can't just blindly start sending things randomly to different zip codes and so forth, but you could take an analysis of, you know, your current customers, get some demographics on them, and then do a direct mail campaign. Now, it may not have immediate results. It may not have the conversions you're looking for, but I have seen quite a bit of success with direct mail advertising and campaigns, especially when the merchant and the business really understand their demographic well. It works very, very well. Again, you know, a direct mail, you can make it very fancy. You can put all the features and benefits and, you know, somebody gets something in the mail these days, it's a little bit more rare. I mean, we're all getting our statements online. We're getting everything online. So when you get something in the mail, it just kind of grabs your attention at this point versus 10 or 15 years ago when we were getting a lot of mail. That could be a big portion of your marketing strategy, is really focusing on direct mail and understanding your demo and then finding a company that can execute this for you. Now, if you have happy consumers and you have people who are reordering your products and service, another thing that you can do is you can reward your customers for referrals, or, you know, you can send them some free products and so forth, but offering customers rewards for their referrals or even for their reviews, leaving you a review and leaving you feedback is huge in direct response, because that's going to help build future customers' trust, right? If you go on Amazon and you see a product that has no reviews, the odds of you buying it are slim to none. So you have to make sure as much as possible to have reviews, to have positive feedback, to have customer referrals on social media and so forth. So ask your customers. Sometimes, you know, we forget that asking our customers for something can yield very positive results. So ask your customers and ask them to give you a referral or to give you a positive comment or to leave you some feedback on your social pages or whatever the case is. It will help you tremendously. It's going to cost you very little money to ask for this. And even if, you know, 2 or 3% of your customers do this, it can be huge over a couple of months. Now, last but not least, a channel that's been explored and that's, you know, sometimes seen as scammy and not as trustworthy and so forth, is affiliate marketing. Affiliates make a commission for promoting your product or service, so they have skin in the game in order to sell your products or services. Now, in the past, affiliate marketing has been seen as scammy, as people who are just trying to make a quick buck and not really, you know, focusing on their customer or whoever they're referring to a product or service. The FTC has come down quite a bit on affiliate marketers, especially the large ones. So the space is cleaning up. Now, I wouldn't say, you know, open to an affiliate program and just allow anybody to promote your product or service. If you're working with a network or if you're recruiting your own affiliates, you really have to vet the affiliates, because ultimately, if an affiliate is selling your product or service, if they're doing it incorrectly, misrepresenting you or lying to customers, you know what's going to happen? The FTC is going to come after you, because you shouldn't be allowing people to missell you and make false representations. So if you do rely on affiliate marketing, or if you're thinking of opening up affiliate marketing, it is a great channel. The only thing is that you really have to be diligent and review your affiliate marketers' practices, so you don't, you know, fall into the trap of you're making a ton of sales and you're not really looking at what's happening. And at the end of the day, you can really just take a look at the end of the month. And if you have a lot of refunds and chargebacks from a particular affiliate, it's probably the sign that these are not people that you want to be working with. So know your numbers, investigate your channels, take a look at what's working, and think about old strategies, because they come back. Like I said, mail order, phone orders, all these things are coming back, let's say, in style, because they're more personal approaches and people want to feel a connection with a product or service or a brand. I hope this episode has helped you and you got a couple of ideas of what you can do in your direct response business in order to gain more market share and get better and more loyal customers. If you need help with your payment processing, or if you have any questions on this episode, feel free to comment down below and I would gladly help you out. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have yourself a great day. Hope you found today's session valuable. If you have any questions for me or just want to connect, please feel free to visit my website, mariaspiragis.com. That's M-A-R-I-A-S-P-A-R-A-G-I-S.com. I'd love to hear what you're working on, so drop me a line on any hot button issues your business is experiencing. And remember, don't worry about failure. You only have to be right once.